So, yeah, Glastonbury, tell me, I'm going for the first time this year, Billy, and I'm, as usual, I'm using you as a kind of agony uncle to help me a little bit through this process. Can you kind of understand where I'm coming from, that I've always been a bit reluctant about something like Glastonbury, that I've built up the wrong side of it, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I can imagine how some people might find it anathema, particularly if it's raining. Because Glastonbury, unlike a lot of festivals, I don't know, you know, if you go, like, if you went to some of the festivals I went to in my teens, like Reading Festival.
Yeah.
If it turned out to be a bit of a mud fest, you could just walk into town and get a train home. Where at Glastonbury, you're kind of like on an island.
Yes.
You're trapped there. If it does turn nasty, you can't easily get off. So yeah. I've always kind of liked that.
Yes.
Because it's the same for artists.
Yes.
You know, if you're there, you're there. I've always thought that was a bit of an attraction.
Yeah.
And then there's also this kind of like the whole sort of Glastonbury mythos that comes with it as well. The way it's become the kind of like the, I don't know if I should say hip, but the kind of like the pop Glyndebourne.
Definitely.
You know, one has to be there. One has to be seen to be there.
Yes.
You know, but having said that, to perfectly honest, both as a punter and as an artist, I have to say that Glastonbury Festival makes most other festivals look like a gig in a field.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else going on at Glastonbury. And it's not just the variety of bands that are there and acts and different kind of things. It's not just the fact that there's always been a theatre stage and a circus tent and all that other kind of stuff you don't get at other festivals.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of political legacy that Glastonbury was born in opposition to Thatcherism, really. It's real, you know, the sort of modern Glastonbury, the earlier incarnation, the hippie incarnation, was, you know, there was a lot of festivals like that going on in the 60s. But the modern incarnation of Glastonbury was born, really, in opposition to Thatcherism.
And you still think there's traces of that? You still think it's rooted in that?
They're not just traces. I mean, the fact that Greenpeace and Water Aid and Oxfam are so to the fore in everything that Glastonbury does, you don't get that. V.
Yeah.
Or you know, Tea in the Park. You know, I think that's what makes Glastonbury a different atmosphere, and why it's become iconic for bands as well as punters.
But as it's become more successful, become more of a brand, if you like, more iconic, and in a way successful because it represents the success of live music in other ways, do you think some of these other elements are being drowned out, or are they still fighting and they still give it the spirit that you're talking about?
Well, definitely Glastonbury has been a victim of its own success. You could definitely say that. I mean, it was a lot more, you know, when I first went in the 80s, it was a lot more like, you know, Bristol goes to the countryside for a weekend. You know, it was all the kind of hip bands and the groovy people from Bristol, of which there are quite a few, despite what the Londoners think. You know, there's always been a great scene in Bristol, particularly a black music scene. And that was, you know, Glastonbury originally was a lot like that. And then it kind of like moved on from that, and it picked up all the crusty elements in the late 80s and the early 90s. And then kind of came out the other side with this big fence and the sort of dominant position it has. But yeah, I totally accept that you know, it's changed from what it originally was. But the very fact that, you know, Michael Eavis rang me up and asked me to bring Left Field back because we're going to, you know, it suddenly occurred to him that, you know, there were very strong chance that this year's festival will be under a Conservative government.
Yeah, yeah.
So he, you know, having Left Field kind of like sort of run its course in some ways and had a fallow year last year in which there was some question about whether we would, you know, get our position back. He actually contacted me and said, you know, we really need to do this.
Yes.
This is a really important thing to have at the festival.
Yeah.
And what that, you know, what that suggests to me, because he doesn't need politics at the festival. He's got politics at the festival in the form of, you know, the broad movements of, you know, the ecological movements. That have come to the fore in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
He didn't need to, you know, ring me up and say, I want a red edge to the politics as well. You know, because, the kind of politics I represent are not hugely, you know, you wouldn't say they're hugely fashionable in pop. You know, they're still quite marginalised compared to the way it was in the 1980s. So the very fact that he rang me and asked me to bring it back suggests to me that the festival still has, it's a very, very important part. The politics are still an important part of the festival as much as the bands.
Yes, because what I've noticed with Michael is there's, as much as I have my, whatever they are, based doubts, I've noticed he's got them too, about what he thinks of the spirit of the place and what he thinks of what happens after success. And what's interesting about him is he is constantly trying to twist it a little bit. And he's upset almost that it becomes, you know, the pop Glyndebourne or part of the season like Wimbledon and Henley. You know, he actually doesn't like that.
He said to me a few times in the 90s, how can I stop so many people coming? I mean, you don't often hear people like Vince Powell saying that their festivals.
Yeah.
You know, because he was concerned about he's concerned about the quality of the experience that people have.
Yes.
I mean, I know a lot of people were angry when the fences went up. Mm. But the reason that the fences went up was that there's another festival in Denmark called Roskilde, which I've also played at, which is quite similar to Glastonbury. So there's an activist edge to it. You could kind of say it's a sister festival almost.
Yeah.
And a kid was killed at Roskilde because of crowd problems. Mm. And a couple of years before they put the fences up, it really was getting really crowded. I mean, you wouldn't want to take your kids there because if you lost them, you know, you might not see them again for the whole weekend. So his concerns that drive what he does at the festival are not the usual concerns, which is to sell the maximum amount of beer and the maximum amount of T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has other concerns. Mm. I think that shows in both his hands-on presence at the festival over the weekend, but also, that he's thinking, what's going to happen to the festival next year? You know, flipping heck, if the Tories are in,
yes,
I better do something about this.
Yes. And what is your reading of what the identity of the festival is? I mean, on one hand, because of the way it's now filtered through the media, it's got that sort of slightly glamping thing and the BBC thing and it's showbiz. But it's obviously a sort of metaphor for a city in the sense that there's underground areas and there's little alleyways.
That's exactly it, mate. It depends what part, you know, you can either go down to the main stage and have a straightforward rock festival experience, walking between the main stage and the other stage. Or you can go out into the suburbs and have a completely different experience. There's an entire dance festival there, if you want to do that. You know, there's a theatre festival, a comedy festival. You know, that's why bits of the festival every now and then break off and go off on tour, you know, like Los Vegas did.
Yes.
So, you know, it depends on what sort of festival. I mean, I was looking at some of the stages. There's some stages there I could quite happily stay there all weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know people who do that.
Yeah.
They just camp in one spot. And they occasionally go off. They might go off for a stroll every now and then.
Mm.
But it's like going to visit a city for a weekend.
Yeah,
you can never see everything in that city. Mm. You get it, but you've got to try and see the things that you want to see. But the things that you do in between, the getting from A to B, the going to find something to eat, the waking up on a wet day or a nice day, all those kind of things add to it.
Mm.
And kind of like. Bring it more, you know, beyond just. I mean, sometimes I'll be perfectly honest with you. Sometimes it's really a slog when the weather's not good.
Mm.
But any festival's like that.
Sure.
You know, the weather can have that kind of effect on any festival.
They talk about the activist edge, though, and the fact that you're doing left field this year, and that's sort of you saying that it's not necessarily fastable, that kind of politics. I mean, that in itself is interesting. That for all the success of popular culture and pop music and rock music, and for all its sort of impact on the media and impact in culture, essentially what's happened is the radical edge has dropped away and been replaced by it just being like a big party, almost a big picnic. And it's almost like you have to smuggle in the element of dissent that originally was the spirit of the music and why it happened.
Yeah, but you know why that's changed, Paul. I mean, when you and I were first listening to music, the only way that young people had to communicate with each other was through pop music.
Mm.
So consequently, the music that had an edge to it was the most vital music for us.
Mm.
It didn't need to be a political edge, but a cultural edge was the music that really got us going. But that was a lot of that was you know, transmitted orally.
Mm.
You know, how did you know to go and see the Sex Pistols?
Mm.
It wasn't because they were on the news that night or Top of the Pops or the front of the NME.
Mm.
You know, it was that, and that was the one platform that we had to express our ideas. Now people have so many platforms. Mm. pop music is so ubiquitous, it would be ridiculous to imagine it could still keep its edge. But I think, plus the fact that we live in much less ideological times than we did in the time when the festival was formulated in the 80s, you know. Politics in itself has changed. But I think with the change of government and with the pressure that's going to be put on, I think cuts, particularly in cuts in, you know, further education, that more young people are going to become aware of politics, more young people are going to become aware, and subsequently more young bands will write about it. You know, I was really, really pleased to go out to Barking and Dagenham during the election to fight the BNP and to find it was predominantly young people who'd never, you know, never really heard of Billy Bragg, didn't really know much about the Clash. You know, and we had to talk to them about Rock Against Racism to get them to understand this wasn't the first time we've had to use our culture to fight these people. And I'm really encouraged by that.
Yes. Because so, I think that's one of the reasons, Billy, that I'm always sort of, you know, anxious about something like Glastonbury, as I see this collection of you know, over 100,000 people who are all being ultimately pacified. I find myself reverting to Marxist language lately, and I'm staring in the face, and this might just be my age, you know, a real pacifying of the masses. But what's really disappointing is it's a pacifying of the masses through the music I hold dear.
Well, you see, down at Leftfield, we're not pacifying people. We're doing the opposite of that, Paul. We're trying to galvanise people.
Absolutely.
We're trying to bring, you know, what I want to do at Leftfield is encourage young bands to come in. And, you know, I don't want it just to be a load of old Clash fans standing around saying those were the days. There's no future in that at all.
No
we
way.
Have something to transmit to the younger generation about how we use music as a vital force to bring about both cultural change and attempt to bring about political change. But there are young people out there, right? For instance, Thea Gilmore, on the night of the election, wrote a song about how she felt about the whole process. And, you know, as soon as I saw that, I thought, well, you know, we need her at Leftfield. I want to encourage that. I don't want... Because it's a lot hard. I mean, I'll tell you another thing that's really hard for young bands is, you know, when you were writing for the New Musical Express and I was making music, the editors of the main music papers were more, broadly speaking, were children of 1968. You know, they believed that music should say something more than just, I'm great, you're shit, you like my socks. And so consequently, I knew, and you knew as well, that if we wanted to talk politics, we would at least be taken seriously. We might not be agreed with. We might get, you know, challenged on it. But the discourse that we had was, you know, respected within the confines of the music press. The trouble is now, if you write a political song, you're likely to someone say, oh, for quite, you know, there's no support for artists who want to say that anymore. So I think it's, you know, the younger artists who want to write about these issues need to be encouraged. I don't think Glastonbury represents pacification. I think instead Glastonbury represents you coming together and finding other like-minded people who want to engage in the world. Because, you know, I'm a supporter of Greenpeace. I'm a supporter of Oxfam. I'm a supporter of WaterAid. But I'm, you know, I'm working on a more, as we said earlier, a more of a red edge than they are. But there are other people who don't really do politics, generally, who come to the festival and feel that in that space, somehow, there's a context for them to engage. Don't ask me why they have to be at Glastonbury Festival, but, you know, the kind of reputation of the festival as an activist gathering goes ahead of itself. So when people are there, they're more conducive to engage in.
So what you know, approaching curating the Leftfield stage, what kind of inheritance have you felt from the festival itself, combined with those, you know, new responsibilities that come about now in terms of keeping this kind of thing alive? You know, what have you put into making this fit into Glastonbury and also fit into your own sort of trajectory?
Well, a mixture of debate and music, first and foremost, which is what we, you know, what Leftfield has always tried to do. And quite a strong presence for organised labour rather than political parties or single issue groups. Broader issues than that, you know. For instance, you know, we've got a debate on Six Music and Asian Network, which is actually really a debate about cuts in public services, which Six Music and Asian Network represent. So it's trying to make people, you know, make an audience that may not normally connect with these things connect the defence of Six Music with the defence of public sector jobs.
And try and
do that for terms of the debates. But with the music, I'm trying to create in Leftfield an atmosphere where artists who are like me when I made my first album, writing broadly humanitarian songs, but haven't made that ideological connection. And it was the miners' strike that allowed me to make that connection.
With
you know, ideological politics rather than, you know, broad sort of singing about it politics. And what we're trying to do at Left Field is connect with those younger bands, you know, like the King Blues and Frank Turner, you know, Get Cape Where Cape Fly, those kind of people, and sort of give that a little bit of encouragement, bring that together, bring that under our roof, and say, yeah, you know, this is a continuing tradition, you know, and I think that's the one thing that rock and roll can do. It can make you realise you're not the only person in the world who cares about these kind of things. Now, it might be cares about a particular haircut, or cares about a particular emotion, but it can also be cares about a particular issue.
Yes,
and I think what our remit in Left Field is to celebrate that part of our tradition, and to encourage a new generation to start to pick up on that fact that there's this thread that runs through our music. One of the many beautiful traditions that we have in our music is a tradition for, you know, engaging in issues.
It seems to be that kind of metaphor for the disconnection that there is between those people that now, you know, love pop because it's available and it's obviously very attractive and it's got a lot of great things about it, and reuniting it with that, you know, idealistic spirit that it is an opposition to governmental and capitalist forces rather than just being, you know, used by them to you know, distract us.
Well, that, you know, there's always going to be that element in it. I mean, it's a pretty flimsy medium with which to try and put across, you know, sort of like editorialise in. However, there have been great, you know, great moments, and Stevie Wonder's performing at the weekend. He's had one of those careers which has been an incredible, you know, crossover of politics and popular music.
Yes.
So there's plenty of examples out there, times when it does work. I've always felt strongly that, you know, that while there will always be those of us who carry on that particular line, carry on pursuing that particular furrow, there are other times when the whatever, the planets all line up and it becomes to the centre like it did in the 80s with Red Wedge. But, you know, I think we've not been in that period through much of New Labour, apart from around the time of the Iraq War, and that kind of dissipated. But I think now with a Conservative-led government and with the pressure that's going to be put on, you know, on wages and university places and further education and stuff like that, I think that time is coming again. So I think, the you know, for those of us who like our music to be content over style, I think the tide is starting to flow in our direction. And I'd like Left Field to kind of help encourage that kind of thing.
Oh, and where do we find you, Billy, and what are you doing?
Well, you can find us down, we've moved from where we used to be. We're now on the route from the main stage to the other stage. If you walk, you have to walk past, or if you go one way, you walk past the place where you recharge your telephones, the orange telephone recharge place. We're opposite that now.
Okay.
So I think we'll have a lot of walk-up trade who happen to be coming to waiting while their phones charge, come and pop in and see us in Left Field. And on the first day, we've got debates from 12 to 3, then I'm running a thing called Bill's Big Roundup, where I'm going to go around and pick up artists from other stages, invite people to come along, sort of sit down, play some songs for an hour and a half. And our first one on Friday will be all young men who are part of our Jail Guitar Doors project that we found in prisons in the UK, writing songs. They're going to be performing. And then we've got bands from... we've got comedy from 5 till 6, and we've got bands from 6 till 10. And on Friday, we've got Get Cape, Wear Cape, Fly, followed by Reverend and the Makers, followed by Carl Barrett. Then we've got, on Saturday, we've got the same again, debates, the roundup comedy. Then we've got Thea Gilmore, followed by Frank Turner, followed by me. And I put myself on Saturday night because nobody else would go on stage while England might possibly be playing Germany. And every time I try to put someone in, they say, well, where we got, what about a match? So I normally play on Sunday, but I felt someone had to get in there, so I'm in there.
So you're going to improvise a singing commentary to it? Or
I'm going to try and focus on what's going on in the tent. And those gigs, I think it's better to do that. If people have come all that way to see you, you better be
Yeah.
Not be watching the telly while you're playing, you know, it's like...
And that thing about coming and going and getting an experience, and what, you know, the Michael thing about the memory that you carry through with the, for the rest of your life, you know, I find myself being, I don't know why, and I hate myself for it sometimes, but I feel myself being horribly jaded about it, and I'm thinking, you know, will it not just be a big crowd of people watching a big crowd of people perform, and the whole thing kind of gets dismantled and life goes on? Or do you really want to start to, you know, feel that important traces can be left in people's lives, and that, that there's a real, you know, a real impact on how they, you know, receive and experience music?
Depends what drugs you've been taking, Paul.
Ah, oh, Billy.
No, I mean, the thing is, the point is, I can guarantee you this, there will be things at Glastonbury Festival that you never imagined you would see. You will see and experience, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I can't tell you what those things will be.
Right.
They might be a band. They might be a haddock pie that you need at that key moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's it's such a broad experience, Glastonbury, to try and just sort of narrow it down to the way people... listen to bands. You're not really grasping what Glastonbury is about.
Sure, yeah.
You know, if you only go to Glastonbury to listen to music, you're missing a huge amount of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more there. And getting away from the stage, you must go up to the Stone Circle while you're there. You must get up there and so you can have a look, you know, get out of the what they call Babylon, you know, where everything's going on, and get up onto the fringes, because that's where all the really interesting stuff goes on.
And what have been some of the great Glastonbury experiences you've had, Billy?
Some of the great Glastonbury experiences. A couple of years ago at Left Field, my son got this Bill Bailey CD where he did a Mickey Taker for Billy Bragg song. And my son thought it was called, what's it called? Something like Fascist Chip Shop or something like that. I think that's what it's called. Anyway, my son thought it was very, very funny, and he kept daring me to play it, so I promised I would play it at Glastonbury at the end of the set, and everyone will be too out of their heads to notice. I said, only me and you will laugh.
Yeah.
Nobody else will know, I promise.
Yeah.
So he was really, really excited about this, and about and this is so Glastonbury, about 2 hours before I was to play, I bumped into Bill Bailey, and I said, come down, because I'm going to play Chip Shop, Unisex Chip Shop. That's what it's called. I'm going to play Unisex Chip Shop. And he said, great, I'll bring my guitar. So he came and he brought his guitar and he met my son, who was just blown away.
Yeah.
And then we got up and played it together, and I could remember more of the words than he could. And that seems to me to be, you know, where else would you be wandering around at a festival and you just bump into to Bill Bailey like that? You know, because it's such an eclectic festival, he was there doing some other stuff, I know not what.
Yeah, yeah.
So that to me was a classic... a blasphemy moment, and everybody just assumes I know Bill Bailey and just called him down. You know, they don't understand how it's just that Brigadoon moment when Glastonbury exists.
Yes, yes.
When magical things happen that wouldn't happen anywhere else.
Yeah, the word magic and the idea of magic, is there something there that you think is, whether it's just what you've described or something that goes back, you know, into ancient times, is there something about the place that is also important?
There is something very much about the place, and the people who set the festival up were very aware of that.
Mm.
You know, they weren't just hippies; they were devotees of the old way. Like John Michel was involved with the people who the original guy who set it up went to Michael. It was a guy named Andrew Kerr and Arabella Churchill, who was Winston Churchill's daughter. And Andrew Kerr was an incredible thing. I went to an event there just last week where Arabella passed away a couple of years ago. They were dedicating a bridge to her. And Andrew Kerr, who was this kind of long-haired, grey-haired guy, kind of druidic-looking guy, started talking about his experience and Arabella and how he first met her when he was with her grandfather, Winston Churchill, and he'd worked for Randolph Churchill as a young man. And about less than a minute later, he was saying, yes, and then Jimi Hendrix came to my flat. And I thought, this is some incredible sort of, you know, mystical nexus.
Yeah.
Which somehow is grounded in that little bit of green and pleasant land.
Yes.
You know, and if I had to, you know, if I had to, and I really don't like doing this, and I speak from someone from personal experience, but defining England, to have to put my finger on a spot and say, this is, you know, this is what it's kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
I would put my finger on Glastonbury Festival. It's as magical and as sort of challenging, and the weather's shit, And people are complaining all the time at how shit it is whilst having a great time themselves and enjoying themselves. You know, it's over-commercialised. It's spiritual. It's England.
Yeah. And how chuffed do you feel now, in a way, to be a kind of semi-official part of the Glastonbury history?
Part of the family, yeah. I feel part of the family. It's great. You know, I mean, left field, as it was configured before, was a little autonomous. We were sort of funded by the trade unions. But since Michael invited us back, we're now actually plugged into the mainframe of the festival, which is just great. You know, it's only up over the hill anyway, here from where I live. It's only about an hour inland. So, you know, it's kind of... I've always felt part of this festival, though.
Yeah.
I've always felt part of this festival. I was once in on the Altiplano in Bolivia on Midsummer's Day, 18,000 feet above sea level, watching some llamas being herded by a guy in a bowler hat, and the biggest ever moon come up over the mountains in the distance, and this incredible thing, and I suddenly thought, oh, gosh, you know, if I wasn't here, I'd be at Glastonbury Festival. Which I really thought was an odd thing to be thinking at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And last thing, Billy, what kind of last-minute advice would you give me to prepare my soul for the experience?
To prepare your soul?
Yeah.
Wellies, mate.
Okay.
Some kind of good, you know, decent footwear.
Yeah.
And you just have to. It is like a camping holiday.
Yeah.
If you prepare, and I suppose you've never done that either.
No, that's probably the nub of it, to be honest.
Yeah. See, that's the thing I like about it. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, my parents would take me away on caravan holidays, which would mostly be spent sitting under an awning, drinking horrible tea, whilst the rain pitter-pattered on the top. You know.
Yeah.
And. Last year at Glastonbury, I rented a beat-up old caravan of a friend of mine and found myself sitting there under the awning with the rain pitter-pattering down.
Yeah.
Thinking, I suddenly had a flashback. This is kind of exactly what my parents did, except, obviously, they didn't come to the best rock festival in the world. So if you kind of approach it like you're going to climb Everest...
Yeah.
And just when the air starts to get thin and things start to get wacky, go with it.
Okay.
And best of all, Paul, best of all, I know this is hard for you. I know this is really, really hard, but my advice to you would be don't resist it.
Yeah.
Don't resist it. Just let go and just float, man, and let it take you where it takes you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take that from you, Billy. I'm floating off now.
Not literally, mate.
No, I know what you mean.
Don't wade in the puddles.
No, I understand. I understand. And I'm coming to find you. I'll find you.
Yeah, come and say hi. Yeah,
I will.
I'll be down there from Wednesday. Come down and I'll try. If it's not going good for you, come down and I'll try and find. I'll find you something that'll touch you.
Yeah, I'm looking for some help there, Billy. So if you see me, I might be panicking. You know.
Yeah, I'm going to be at left field all the time. I'm going to be there the whole time. So
Brilliant.
Come find me and we'll strip off and go for a walk.
Gorgeous, Billy. See you then.
All right, mate. All the best. Bye.